a mermaid dreamed of life on the land.
I've never seen a human this close before.
Now her daughter dreams of the sea.
You know what? Sometimes I even pretend I have fins.
The Little Mermaid 2, Return to the Sea. Get ready for a story unlike any other.
This is the only way. Melody can't know about merpeople or Atlantica.
It's an adventure you'll never forget.
What's happening?
Melody!
Walt Disney Pictures proudly presents an all-new full-length animated feature.
I know this necklace means something. If no one's gonna tell me, I'm gonna find out for myself.
The Little Mermaid 2, Return to the Sea. Premiering only on video and Disney DVD.
I'm too old for this.
Hello, and welcome to Fun Size Sequels, an offshoot of the Unloved Sequels podcast, where we look at the straight-to-video sequels that even the studios didn't make that big a deal of. We're your hosts. Michael, say hello.
Hello.
And me, Claire, defying our parents' nonsensical rules that have only been put in place to keep us safe, but really it would just have been easier and safer for them to have told the truth in the first place, for The Little Mermaid 2, Return to the Sea. Michael, this is a movie that weirdly means quite a lot to both of us. Tell us about Little Mermaid 2, Return to the Sea.
So, this time we're returning to the sea, but with Ariel's daughter, Melody! As she dreams of becoming a mermaid, while Ursula's evil sister, Morgana, I think that's how you say it. Is that how you say it?
Morgana,
plots to seek revenge for Ursula's death and to take over the sea herself. It sounds like a rehash of the first film, and
it's
kind of like the other way around. We're going back to the sea instead of trying to get out of the sea like Ariel was. So
yeah, they didn't work hard on making it different from the first movie. They found a formula and thought, well, this worked once, let's see if it works again.
Yeah, exactly. It was a film that was released directly to video and DVD on September the 19th, 2000, should I say? Nisa 2020, but it was 2000.
Mm-hmm. We old.
We are old. But it was released on May the 7th, 2001 in the UK. So it was a little bit behind.
Was it?
Yeah, different release dates.
Gosh, that's quite a long way behind then. That's what, 6 months? More than that?
Yeah, more than that. But back then they did. They staggered stuff. The film was the 10th most successful direct-to-video release of 2000, with a retail revenue of $121 million. The film sold 6 million VHS and DVD units in the 2000s. So it did very well, competing that this was kind of like not the first VHS sequel Disney ever did. Here's an interesting... Do you want to hear an interesting trivia?
Of course.
So while I was looking up this movie, I was like, oh... When did they stop producing these straight-to-DVD sequels, VHS sequels of Disney? And the last direct-to-video animated sequel Disney made was Bambi 2. It was released in 2006. Mm-hmm. It was very successful, but by then I think like Netflix and streaming might have kicked off a little bit, and I think that the internet was more of a base than it was back then. So they stopped producing.
Oh, I don't know. 2006, Netflix was still on DVDs, though, wasn't it, in the post? Do you remember when Netflix was a postal service?
It was. I used to like that. But it did kind of But I don't know. Well, hang on. I'm trying to think. When did 2006, 2007? That was kind of like the end of the blockbuster era, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So
it would have been like the start of streaming, but you certainly were still getting Netflix DVDs by post.
Yes.
Around the mid-2000s. I certainly was. But yeah, it was probably not long before Netflix properly kicked in as a streaming service.
Yeah, that's so weird. This film has a criminal Rotten Tomatoes score. It has 17% critic and 45% audience. Well, I think it's such a shame.
Wow. 17% from critics.
Yeah, they hated it. They really hated it.
What a grumpy bunch.
I know. Have no souls. So, Claire, do you have any behind-the-scenes information for us from this class?
Well, I do. So, We've got quite a lot of returning players in this movie. Most of the main cast are back. We've got Jodie Benson back as Ariel, Samuel E. Wright as Sebastian, Buddy Hackett as Scuttle, Kenneth Mars as King Triton. We've got Pat Carroll is back, who Woo-hoo! Played Ursula in the first movie. Despite the demise of Ursula in the first movie, they brought Pat Carroll back to play Morgana, which is fantastic because she's just amazing in both movies. R.A.P. Pat Carroll. We've got a couple of recasts. One is Eric. Christopher Daniel Barnes played Eric, or voiced Eric rather, in the first movie. In the second movie, he's voiced by Rob Paulsen. I don't really know why that change happened, except that by sort of 1999, 2000, when this movie would have been in production, mm-hmm. Christopher Daniel Barnes was doing the voice for animated Spider-Man stuff. So, and at that point, I don't think Marvel and Disney were a thing.
They weren't friends. They weren't friends back then.
So it could be that his contract with Marvel, with the Spider-Man things, prevented him from going back and doing a Disney movie, well, possibly. That's not been documented anywhere. That's just me guessing.
Well, Spider-Man is not owned by Disney. It's one of the Marvel characters that's owned by a separate studio because they have the rights to it. So Sony owned Mark Spider-Man. So yeah. Even when they work better now together.
So I'm guessing that might have had something to do with why he's not back in this movie. We've also got a new Flounder. We had Jason Marin voicing Flounder in the first movie, Cam Clark in the second. Again, no reason that I've been able to find for that, except that I guess Flounder's a little bit older, so maybe they found a slightly older voice actor.
Older and wider.
To cover the role. Although actually the timescales in this movies, I love a bit of timescale chat. The timescale in between the two movies is almost spot on. We're going from 1989 for the first movie to 2000. So 11 years have passed, whereas in universe, Melody celebrates her 12th birthday, assuming she wasn't conceived and born immediately at the end of Little Mermaid.
I think it's Honeymoon Night.
I mean, this is Disney. It could well be the case. You're married, therefore you must be pregnant already.
Yeah, obviously.
So, but the timescales kind of work out. We have got a new main character and therefore a new lead actress in Tara Strong. Interestingly, the likes of Amanda Bynes, Lindsay Lohan, Hilary Duff, Britney Spears were all considered to voice the character of Melody. But actually, they brought Tara Strong in just to do some samples, really, of how they kind of wanted the character to sound.
Yeah,
and they loved her work so much that they cast her in the movie. So
that's one thing I really think.
Go on.
That's one thing I really like about this movie is that there is no big, like cartoons these days are going to have these big celebrity names attached to it. And what I really like about these kind of Disney, and even back to when the original movie came out, they use voice actors.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. Actually, this movie doesn't need a star casting because the brand is the star. We already know that what The Little Mermaid is. We don't need a celebrity to attract us to watch this movie because we're going to watch it on the basis of the first film.
But even today, when they kind of like bring out main new Disney cartoons, I don't understand why they need to get celebrities to do the voices over. There's hundreds of really good voice actors out there that have worked on this craft and stuff, and then they just lose these ginormous roles to like big celebrities that all they do is because they can tweet and TikTok about it and they have a following.
Yeah.
And it's not about storytelling, it's about who's in the lead. Like, look at the whole new Buzz Lightyear movie when they replaced Tim Allen with Chris Evans, and you're a bit like, well, it really does anything for the movie. I don't understand why this was necessary to change the cast. Yeah, I just think kind of like, don't, if it doesn't, it's not broken, don't try to fix it.
You know, to quote another Disney movie.
Exactly.
Sort of. One big difference in between these two movies is that we do not have Alan Menken on music in the sequel. Alan Menken did the music for The Little Mermaid, as he does the music for huge amounts of the Disney output, but he did not do any composition on this movie. Instead, we have Danny Troob doing composition, doing the original songs. He has done quite a lot of music work for Disney before in other movies, but within the music department, not as lead writer. As lead writer, he did this and he did Lady and the Tramp 2, Scamp's Adventure, which from memory, it's a long time since I've seen it, but it doesn't have songs, I think. It has underscoring, but I don't think it has songs. So I think this is his only effort as original composer.
I think effort is a good term for this. I think that I've always think that's the weakest part of the movie for me is that the songs aren't as catchy as the original Little Mermaid songs. Yeah. You know, they don't really grasp me as excitingly as the original soundtrack did for the original movie.
Yes, I agree on that, actually. I mean, they're not bad songs, but there are not many of them.
Yep.
And like you say, they're not as catchy. I'm not singing any of them still now, a couple of weeks after watching the movie. I wasn't singing any of them straight after watching the movie. And when you think back to the musical content of Little Mermaid,
the fact that
it got two Academy Awards, you know, it got the Academy Award for Best Original Music Score and Best Song for Under the Sea.
Right.
And so I think it is a disappointment for me that the follow-up hasn't been given as much focus on music. The songs that are there, I don't dislike any of them. I just feel like it wasn't, they just didn't prioritise the music as highly in this film as they have in other movies. Whether that's a sequel thing, I don't know.
I'm going to take you back to 1989 and a little 10-year-old boy living in Barnet, that would be me, in Hertfordshire, in England. And one of the first VHS tapes my dad ever bought me was he went to Covent Garden with my brother for something, I don't remember, and they came back to the Disney store that had just opened in Covent Garden, and he came back with a VHS copy of Sing Along Disney. Oh. And it just had, like, songs from the classic Disney movies, but it had, like, subtitles on the VHS so you could sing along. So I spent a lot of my ages 9 to 10 dancing around my parents' living room to Under the Sea. And then when I came out as gay, they were still surprised. I was like, did you not look at me? You bought me this VHS. I grew up watching this VHS tape singing Under the Sea, and my mum constantly made me watch Barbara Streisand movies. And they wonder why. I feel like I was kind of like pushed in this direction. I still remember that VHS. I used to freaking love it. I think my parents ended up hating it. I don't know where it is. It's probably been thrown away with vindictive hate from my parents.
In the loft or something, won't it? Surely it'll be in the loft.
No, my parents would have thrown it away. They don't like clutter.
My parents would have kept it in the loft. My VHS copy of The Little Mermaid is probably still in my parents' loft, because this is one of the ones that we had as well. Loved Little Mermaid as a kid. And do you know what? I watched Little Mermaid 2 when it first came out. And this, I said in the intro that this is a movie that it carries this kind of weird importance for both of us. And one of the reasons for me anyway, maybe you don't care. But for me, this movie came out as I was getting towards the end of my days as a student. I'd been friends with you for a couple of years by then. We were both working at Blockbuster Video. You were my boss. You gave me a job to kind of help boost my student income.
Those days.
And so my interest in movies, I didn't watch a lot of movies when I was a kid. I think we've talked about this before. My family are not like movie watching people as such. Like, my parents have got a DVD collection, but it's not extensive, and that's fine. And likewise, when I was growing up, we had a few movies, but there weren't that many. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I was a student and I was friends with you and I was dating a guy who was really into movies as well, very different movies from the ones you were into. So I was watching quite a broad spectrum of movies. And I was working at Blockbuster, where it's part of the job, they expect you to watch the movies that are coming out. And so this was a new release while I was working at Blockbuster. So it's one of the ones that I watched. And I just associate this movie really strongly with my friendship with you. Not for any particular reason, other than I just have these really distinct memories of watching it when we were working together. And it just being, I don't know, it's just one of those things that's really stuck with me as a really strong memory. So I think of this movie very fondly.
Is it more to do with the point of me chasing around one of my other employees, Tim, with a feather duster while we played Peter Andre's Under the Sea? That was a...
Well, I wasn't going to bring that up, but that, I think, is part of the association for me. But it's a movie that I really like, and I was really enjoying... I really enjoyed watching it then, and I was really looking forward to watching it again for this.
And do you have any favourite songs in this one?
In this one? Well, this is the thing. The choices are quite limited. So I guess my favourite song is going to be, for a moment, Melody's song, her kind of I wish song that all the Disney I was going to say princesses. She's not really a Disney princess, Melody, but you know what I mean. The, all the Disney princesses have their I Wish song.
Yeah.
And she has For a Moment, which is, it comes at around the same point in the movie as Part of Your World does in the original. It has a very similar sound to it. And there's a bit towards the end where Melody and Ariel are doing a kind of weird summer loving style duet where they're not duetting together because they each don't know the other is singing. In universe, but their parts kind of sit alongside one another, and I really like that song. I can do this and more, to swim in the sea like I walk on the shore, out of my shell, not closed up like a clam. Look out, see, this is me, here I am. For a moment, all of me is alive and at home in the sea. I'm swirling and twirling, so graceful and grand, not stubbing my toes, getting stuck in the sand. For a moment, life is cool. I'm splashing the world's biggest pool. This is more than my thoughts ever thought it could be. For a moment, just a moment, lucky me. If only for one moment, I had shared with you all I know. The sea wouldn't be a mystery. Oh, why did you have to go? Everything's newer and brighter and bluer and truer to life than before. Watch me soar. But it's not as strong as the songs from the original, and it's quite slim pickings to kind of choose a favourite song. There's not that many to choose from, so I think most people would be pushed really to choose anything other than For a Moment. What about you? Do you agree, or have you got a different favorite?
I really liked Down to the Sea. What was the opening song to the number before the bad stuff happens when they take Melody to go and see King Triton? Mm-hmm. That's spreading through the ocean from sea to shining sea. There is no hesitating. Today we're celebrating Ariel's melody. Today with Triton's daughter comes back here to the water. We're gonna have a spree. The boat is nearer now. I think I hear her now. Ariel's melody.
This is your world, my darling. One world, the land and sea. My hope for you for always is that your heart will hold part of me.
And it's kind of like got a hint of Under the Sea, and they're singing about Ariel returning to the sea and stuff. And I think that's quite a good, strong song for Ariel to sing. So I'm a big Jodie Benson fan. I really liked her as Ariel, and I felt like that was her big song in that movie.
One thing that did disappoint me musically is that Morgana didn't have a song. Or, well, she does have a song. It got cut. There was a song. She had a song called Gonna Get My Wish, and you can find it on YouTube.
Oh, Mummy dearest, you'd be impressed. Morgana, your baby, no longer is second best. Ursula, sweetie, you blew it and how. I'll steal the trident and seal it with an owl. Move over, merfolk, get out of my way. I'm carpaying my diem, I'm seizing my day.
Gonna get your wish tonight.
I deserve the power.
Wish tonight.
It'll be my finest hour.
Wish tonight.
The cringe and crawlers I demand.
Yay! Gonna get your wish tonight.
There's so much to think about.
Wish tonight.
Spread some ink about
tonight's the night. I'm gonna make my final stand. That's right. Tonight's the night. The sea will be in your command. Tonight's the night.
And it's not a bad song.
So why'd they cut it?
I don't know. Maybe pacing. It's not a banger. It's no Poor Unfortunate Soul. by any means. A Poor Unfortunate Soul is one of my favorite Disney songs.
Poor Unfortunate Soul. Who cares?
There we go. There's another one that we don't need the clip for. You know, I used to like sing that song all the time.
Great.
It's a brilliant number. And again, Gonna Get My Wish isn't up to that standard, but I don't think it's any worse than the songs that were kept in the movie. So maybe it was taken out for pacing, or I don't know.
I think like the animation in this looks better than the original Disney Little Mermaid drawings. It's very clean and crisp.
We watched over the course of 2 days. I watched these with my kids. My kids had seen the first movie before. My son had seen the first movie before. I'm trying to think whether my daughter has watched Little Mermaid. Probably not recently enough that she remembers. She might have, like, it may well have been on when she was a baby. But she's probably not aware of having seen it before, where my son would have been aware of having seen it before. Neither of them had seen the second one before. We watched over 2 days. And I do remember thinking, actually, the animation quality, where we said with Return of Jafar, you could see the difference from the Aladdin quality to the Return of Jafar quality. With this, I didn't see a discernible difference in quality of animation. It looked just as crisp as the first one. I agree with you on that.
So how many Little Mermaids would you give Little Mermaid 2, Return to the Sea, Claire?
I think I'm going to give it a 3. And I have to say, before, I'm going to explain, before I watched it, I would probably have said I would give it a 4 based on my memory of it. And 20 years ago, if we'd been making this podcast, if podcasts were even a thing, I would probably have given it a 4. The world has moved on a little bit, and movies have moved on a little bit, and Disney has moved on a little bit. And so I think it doesn't hold up quite so well anymore, in that, like we said, it plot wise, it's very similar to the original. A lot of the keynotes of this, and in fact, there are points that they just do direct throwbacks. There are loads of callbacks in the second movie to the first one, which I do like, but at the same time, it doesn't help make the sequel feel fresh.
Yes, exactly.
It's very much it doesn't want to move out of the shadow of The Little Mermaid. It's quite happy to just sit underneath it as a kind of sub thing. My big observation watching both movies was how much the notion of the Disney princess has changed over the last 20 or 30 years. My kids liked both the movies. My daughter, when I asked her which one she preferred, said she liked them both equally. My son preferred the second one because he liked the introduction of Melody as a character. But they weren't as caught by it as they are by other Disney. They haven't asked to watch it again, which when you compare that to the likes of your current generation Disney movies, your Moanas, your Frozens, your Encanto. I mean, I watched Encanto every day for about a month when it came out. I love it. It's a brilliant movie. But oh my goodness, because it was Christmas holidays and then we were off school because my son had COVID, and we literally watched that movie every day for a month because my kids wanted to. And these movies really capture my kids' attention in a way that The Little Mermaid and I think that generation of Disney movies don't. And I think a big part of that is the ambition of the characters. All those movies that I just talked about, the characters are they still have their I wish song, but what their wish is something for themselves. And actually Melody's more so than Ariel's. Melody's wish is to be in the sea and to have the freedom, and she'd love to be a mermaid and yada yada. But when you go back to the original movie, Ariel's wish was to marry a guy. Did you see what I mean? Like, which is what all the princesses wanted in that generation. And that's what all the little girls wanted at that point in time as well. So this is not necessarily a criticism of Disney. It's just that the world has moved on, and some little girls still dream of being a princess. I still dream of being a princess, and I'm not a little girl anymore. I'm quite a big girl. But a lot of little girls and little boys dream about having an adventure, or discovering something about themselves, discovering something about the family, going off to sea, going on a voyage, having magical powers, rather than meeting a person and falling in love and getting married. That's not what my children, you know, we used to play at getting married when we were 6, 7, 8 years old. As far as I'm aware, my kids do not play that at all. So for that reason, that was a really long-winded explanation, and I apologize.
It was really, really long, Claire.
Like,
It's supposed to be a fun-size episode.
I'm going to bring it down from what would have been a 4 20 years ago to now it's a 3, but I do still like the movie, but I like it. I think there's a lot of nostalgia behind my love for it now. I think if I watched it for the first time now, I might feel slightly differently. How about you? What's your score?
Well, I went into it thinking I was going to give it a 3 because I'm a massive fan of the original, but I swear with you that it was, we always talked about it quite fondly between both of us. But I'm going to have to go knock it down to 2.5. I thought it was very mediocre. I enjoyed watching it. I think I can probably put it to bed for a while. The thing that irritated me most about this movie is how they made Ariel into like a helicopter mom, how she was so annoying as a mother. Yes. And I was a bit kind of like, she was so young and adventurous and rebellious as an adult. And now she's a parent. She's become this, can't do this. You can't do that. You can't do this. I was like, you defeated Ursula. Why are you so bothered about Ursula's sister? You know, I looked at it. And I think that's because I see a lot of my friends as parents now. And I was a bit kind of like, if that was my friend and she was fretting about not letting her kid even paddle or being really awkward around other kids, I would have been like, you're being a helicopter mom. Back off. Let your kid be herself.
Yeah.
Your father is the king of the ocean. Why are you bothered? And like at the beginning, opening scene of this movie, when Mongara turns up and takes Melody, they're like, we won't stop until we find her. Did they give up after a week? They've had 12 years to look for this woman. I'm like, he's the king of the ocean. So they're just like, oh, well, we tried. That
You've
was the
given
worst
this so much thought.
I was a bit like, you didn't even bother trying looking for her. She was hiding in, when the finale of the film came up, Triton just turned up in Alaska, wherever the ice cap was where it was living. I was kind of like, you found her now, didn't you, when she's got your fault?
Wow. You've been triggered by this movie.
I was a little bit more triggered than I think I was before. Yeah, it's a 2.5 for me. But yeah. Claire, how can people get in contact with us?
So tell us what you thought of the movie. You can leave us a comment, email us on unlovesequels@gmail.com, and you can find us on all the socials at unlovesequels.
So that's our episode this week, guys. Do not forget to like and subscribe. And that's goodbye from me, Michael.
And me, Claire.
So join us next time for another Unloved Sequel. Take care, guys.